Hello, everyone. Welcome to From Here with a View, a We Are the Seeds Philadelphia podcast. I'm Tylin Ogoyo, director of We Are the Seeds. In November of 2022, we held our third annual Seeds Philly event at Cherry Street Pier. We were so fortunate to have the incredible Roberto Mucado Barrero open our festival with a call to the ancestors and Taino teachings. Roberto Mucado Barrero is a human rights advocate, consultant, cultural advisor, writer, artist, and musician. He has worked with the United Nations, the International Indian Treaty Council, and the American Museum of Natural History. Here now is Roberto Mucado Barrero.
Taigui dituno kena datia uno diri mukaro agwebana boriken taino daka koaidaka koaidaka koaidaka. I just wanted to give you a greeting in my indigenous Taino language, which is not English or Spanish or any other colonial language. What you heard is probably very similar to what Christopher Columbus heard when he first came over to the Caribbean region and encountered my ancestors. So I'm so honored to be here with all of you and to be part of this wonderful, really incredible celebration of the cultures and arts of indigenous peoples here at the We Are the Seeds event in Philadelphia. As a Taino person, to be included in the event is very important, not only to me personally, but also to our community. Many of our cultures today are not really seen in the mainstream. And so therefore, there's a lot that's misrepresented or misunderstood, or really just not even thought about because we're almost erased from the perspectives that you might encounter every day. So these type of events are very important because it allows our voices to be heard. It provides an opportunity for us to be represented in the way that we'd like to be represented, in the way that we feel comfortable being represented. And so I'm very honored to be a part of this. Ahom.
Hari ko, Hari ko, Hari ko, Hari ko.
So thank you very much. Again, this is a call to the forces around us, all the directions. I called out to each one, alerting them to our presence. Finally, the last two were to acknowledge the sky, Father Sky, or the sun energy. And then the last one honors the mother earth, or in our language, we say Ataveira, who can be not only the earth, meaning the earth, the soil, the land, but also for Taino people, she can be the ocean and the seas and even the universe. Because for Taino people, when we look at the world around us, when we look at our relationship to the world, everything starts for our people with the female energy. You know, we came from Mother Earth. Our women in our communities were honored. Many of them had specific titles, even chief titles in our communities back before the arrival of the Spaniards to the Caribbean islands. And so that way of looking at the world, understanding that woman energy is the first thing that we acknowledge and the first thing that we honor. And even the matrilineal lines of our people, the way they track their lineage and genealogy, originally, traditionally, it was through the matrilineal lines. And that was important in relationship building. We come from the Caribbean islands, and our ways are a little different from what you might see in this area for Native peoples here. And so there was a lot of going back and forth, not only from village to village, but from island to island. And they didn't go and expand communities and relationships by warfare. They really did that through diplomacy. And that was noted time and time again by the early explorers, people who came to colonize this hemisphere, starting in the Caribbean islands. It was noted again and again how diplomatic the people were, at least in our region, in those beginning contexts, that they always tried to work things out with those newcomers by diplomacy. And of course, you know, as history goes, you know, things didn't turn out so well for our folks. And as a result, we really suffered a lot at the hands of those people and when our people really tried to find a way to coexist. And I think that now, especially in these times that we find ourselves in, that kind of looking at the way of the world, that kind of diplomacy that was exhibited during that first contact period is really something that many people around the world are looking for now. We look towards institutions like the United Nations. Tailin, my sister, acknowledged some of my work in the human rights area. And I've been going to the UN for many years, along with many indigenous peoples' representatives, not only from this hemisphere, but around the world. Because our peoples, wherever we might find ourselves, peoples who are very closely connected to the land and rooted to those cultures, rooted to place, really their identity is connected to place, they've really suffered in no matter where they were by others who wanted to come in and remove them from the territories to access resources, and resources that maybe they didn't have or they exploited in their own area. Those early Europeans, they had depleted many resources in Europe already. They had gone through an 800-year war or conflict with, people call them the Moors, or those are really the Islamic empires that were part of the fabric of that then emerging Europe, because it wasn't even Europe at that time. It became Europe after the connection with the Western Hemisphere, because a lot of those resources that were exploited, they came to the Western Hemisphere. They took those resources, natural resources and human resources, from the Western Hemisphere, and that with the enslavement of Africans, and that really started what then became the Renaissance and those things in Europe. So we really built up, because of that exploitation, there's a real connection between this side of the world and that side of the world at that time. But a lot of those resources were already exploited, and so they were looking around to try to replenish coffers and to really build up their countries or their nations. And it really came at the expense of our peoples. Again, even though our folks tried to work with folks, it really didn't turn out that well, because they didn't really see us as human beings. When we talk about human rights, many of our cultures don't have a real way to translate that in indigenous languages. We really have words that are more related to the idea of responsibility and respect. And so that was a little different from what was happening. But when we go to speak about human rights before international forums like the United Nations, it's because all of us have inherent human rights. And as indigenous peoples, we see time and time again that our rights have been violated by others, and oftentimes in ways that even violates the laws that they say that they uphold. These could be religious laws, these could be secular laws that they have, that we really see a violation. And why did that happen in the beginning? Because we weren't seen as human, because we had a different way of looking at things. For the Taino, because of our connection to Ataveira, or Mother Earth, and our upholding of women. Many of the Spaniards who came from a more patriarchal society, where they didn't see the beginning from a female energy, they really see God as the father, and then the next in line and power was the king. And so all of that was translated, and it really caused conflict in the very beginning. So that's just kind of showing you a little bit about where the conflicts began in the New World, quote unquote, because it was the old world for our people. We've been here for since time immemorial. And I can tell you that in our stories and everywhere that I've traveled around this hemisphere, we know that there was a lot of interchange amongst indigenous peoples before the arrival of Columbus and the Europeans who followed. We know that people were interchanging all throughout this hemisphere. You can see that in the Caribbean islands, but the influences of people from South, Central and North America, as well as there was not walls that were separating our peoples at the time, so we were traveling back and forth. One of the ways that we traveled around a lot was through the building of what we call canoa. These are great canoes. In those early days, a Spanish chronicler or somebody who was an eyewitness at the time said that some of the Taino canoes that he saw could hold over 150 people. So you can imagine the size of the trees at that time. You can imagine how healthy the people were at that time period. So they were going from island to island, going across to the Yucatan Peninsula. Our neighbors were the Mayans. We were traveling and interchanging with people in South America as well as in North America. And there's also historic evidence and written testimony that some Taino people were living in Florida near the Calusa people. So our folks were always there. We have a word for Florida in our language. So these are some of the things that I just wanted to share while I show you some of these instruments that I brought with me. These are artifacts that were actually in museums, and that they're kind of being held there. We don't have the opportunity to get them back, but we did cast of those artifacts, and they're actually exact replicas of the pieces that you would see there. And this way we can bring them out, we could talk to people, we can engage in conversation about our culture. But one of the first instruments that I used, I'm gonna show you here, we call this a guamo. This comes from a queen conch. This particular one, you can make them out of other large shells as well. But what we do is kind of cut the tip off here. And one about this size, there could be about 3 pounds of meat in here. That meat is removed. And then we make this horn. You can see how loud those horns are. Imagine hundreds and hundreds of Taínos doing songs at one point in time, sounding these horns. And these horns are sort of like, would be comparable to the cell phone today, wireless technology. So what we would be able to do, let's say if there was a lot of rain in the highlands, they could alert people in the lowlands just by the way they were tuning these horns or blowing the horns. Also, when even this even happened in my grandfather's time period, when people would come in from fishing, they would be able to know right away, even before they got to shore, if they had a good catch or not by the way they were sounding these guamos. And the guamos are so respected today. You'll find them in a lot of areas in the Caribbean. Some people even still put them around their burials. I know my family has that around their old burial plots. This other instrument that I use, you're probably all familiar with this. Anybody know the name? What'd you say? Maraca, right, maraca, very good. Actually, not a Spanish word. This is an instrument that they encountered when they encountered Taíno people in the beginning. Remember, since we were the site of the first contact between the then emerging Europe and the Western Hemisphere, a lot of our words got translated or incorporated into Spanish and then English. So maraca is like a gourd rattle. These particular gourds, they grow on trees where we're from. And so they grow in different sizes. Some of them quite large, you could make a mask out of them, bowls. But again, like other rattles that indigenous peoples use, they're filled up with something inside, either stones or seeds or something, and gives it that rattling sound. But again, not a Spanish word. Maraca is a Taíno word. Some other words you might be familiar with in Taíno, when there's a kind of tumultuous period in the Caribbean Sea area, and even affects now Central America, Florida, and even the results of those winds could come all the way here. We say huracán, huracán. And that's where you get the English word hurricane. Another word you might be familiar with, tabaco. We say tabaco. In the traditional sense, the word tobacco was not used for the leaf, even though now we use it for the leaf. But originally it was actually for the pipes. We had different types of pipes, not only smoking pipes, but snuff pipes. So those would be called tobacco. The word for in Taíno for the leaves are called cohiba. And even today, that word is honored in Cuba because they have a line of cigars called Cohiba. They still use the word, and some of them are very expensive because, you know, you can't get Cuban cigars here because of the embargo. During the summertime, you might go for a cookout. What do you call the cookout in the form? Barbecue. We say in the language, barbacoa, barbacoa. So that's used in Spanish, and other languages have adopted that word as well. After you eat so much in the barbacoa, you might be so full you want to lay in a hamaca, hamaca, where you get the word hammock. And so interesting, that technology of the hammocks, again, never seen before in Europe, but they saw that technology and it actually changed the shipping, the way people were shipping, because they were sleeping on these kind of flat boards in the past. But then they started to incorporate hammocks in their shipping, and that really allowed them to add more things in the ships as they were going back and forth. But even a hammock made its way up in one of the early Apollo missions, so that indigenous technology went all the way into space with them. So that we really like to think about that and think about where we can go as indigenous peoples. I brought a few more instruments before I wrap up my talk here. This one here has actually been incorporated into a lot of music forms beyond the traditional Taíno form. This is a gourd rasp. In our language, we say guaje, guaje. Some people will call this a guiro or guicharo, but the original Taíno word is called guaje. And basically, these are bottle gourds that grow along the ground. Again, they can come in various sizes, some very, very long. And we'll make some lines in there, kind of hollow them out. You can see a little hole there where I'll hold this up. And we'll rasp around this. But in the island of Boriken, we have a little frog there that's in the trees. We call him Koki. You'll hear that, but in the thousands. One of those little Kokis, they very early on, they found that those little frogs couldn't live anywhere else but in those islands. Except one time they somehow got into some, they took a lot of pineapples. For us, we call pineapples iayama, iayama. In Spanish, they say piña for pineapple. But they took those pineapples and they brought them over to the Pacific. A lot of people think about pineapples as a Pacific Islander innovation, but it actually came from the Caribbean and was shipped over there. And so now you have Dole Pineapple Company and stuff in Hawaii and all those, but those original pineapples came from the Caribbean islands, were sent over there. And so when some of those plants were sent over there, some of those little kokis hitchhiked over there, and now they kind of inserted themselves into the Hawaiian islands. And a lot of those folks, they're not used to them in the generations like we are, so they consider them kind of a nuisance because they're always, but you think about thousands of them. To us, it sounds like a lullaby, but over there, they're like, oh my God, these little frogs are driving me nuts. But this is a drum. That H cut in there represents the frog, and I'm gonna just show you how this sounds. See, it has kind of two notes. It's called a mayawakan. This is made out of a wood that we call in our language guayacan. Guayacan. Again, not a Spanish word, a Taino word. And that word is still used throughout the islands to identify that tree. Like many words that you'll find in the islands, people are thinking that they're Spanish words. But because the Spanish didn't have many of these things in their lands, they had to incorporate the Taino terms for many of these plants, animals, etc. This guayacan is really known as a very hard wood, and they actually call it in English ironwood. That's how hard it is, and it's kind of now these trees are becoming so endangered that you're not allowed to take guayacan anymore out of the islands, or at least out of Puerto Rico. But I'm gonna just show you where the sound comes out here. You'll see that this is kind of hollowed out on this side, and it would be hollowed out in a very similar way that the canoes would be hollowed out, if you can think about it like that. Very large trees, they would actually do some burning on the log, cut a little bit away, burning, cut a little bit away. And so this is done in a similar way, and it was said that before folks would build a house or find wood to build their houses, one piece of wood was reserved to make their drum so that the family would have their own drum in the house. So this is called the mayawakan. So I just shared a little bit about our culture. I shared that we have a different language, and we're very proud of that language, the Taino language, which is part of the Arawakan language group. The Arawakan is a term that that scholars came up with kind of to identify related languages. So our Taino language is actually related to many languages, indigenous languages, not only in the Caribbean, but all the way down into South America. And so they termed that group Arawakan, like maybe some people would term related languages in this region Algonquin languages, but not all the folks identify themselves as Algonquin per se, but the languages are related. So I'll give you an example for Taino language. Our language and the related languages, it almost be like the way you look at the Latin. You know, Latin as a language, like nobody really speaks it anymore except, you know, scholars who are looking in books and they want to learn it and read it. But from Latin was birthed Spanish, Portuguese, Italian, French, what they call the Romance languages. So if you speak Spanish, there's a pretty good chance you could understand Italian pretty well. You might not have all the same words, and the same with Portuguese. It gets a little more dicey when you get to French. The words are not the same, but they came from the same root. So that Arawakan language is like that. So there was a root language at one point, and all the way up from South America throughout the Caribbean islands, these languages were related. So right now, when we're doing language restoration work in the Caribbean, we go back to some of the communities that our language is related to, like the Lokono Arawaks in Guyana, Suriname, French Guyana. And we work with them because we see that many of the word structures and even many words are still the same. Not exactly the same, maybe like Spanish and Italian or Spanish and Portuguese, but very, very close enough for us to help us in the Caribbean really work with our language resuscitation and efforts that are going on. So my final words are just that indigenous peoples are not just one, right? We have a lot of the same issues, but there's many, many tribal nations of people that have their own governments, their own ways of looking and relating to the world around them. There are many indigenous peoples from throughout the hemisphere, from the top of Alaska and the Arctic, all the way down to the tip of Tierra del Fuego in South America, in Chile. And that includes the Caribbean islands. If you really look at a map of the Caribbean islands and see the relationship between the Caribbean island chain, how it goes to South America, then goes to Central America, and then goes to Florida, you really see it looks like a hoop. So for us, that's really the sacred hoop for us, because we were in contact with all of those people at one point. We had communities that were already in Florida at the time of the arrival of Ponce de Leon and these other Spanish conquistadors who had come over to the hemisphere at that time. And of course, our relationship with South America is very well documented, and even our language speaks to that. So I hope that you understand, and as you go to learn about each of these cultures, you see that all of them come from beautiful cultures. They all have their own distinct ways of looking at the world, very engaged in its place-based identity, really that a lot of the work that you see maybe on the different tables really comes from the land that the people lived in and engaged in and really had a relationship with. And I think that relationship now, so many people are looking forward to getting back to somehow. We see that what we've done to the earth is really not sustainable for anybody. And so I think many peoples are now just starting to understand that, hey, maybe indigenous peoples really had a perspective that we need to incorporate in the wider world. So I want to thank you for your patience and your time. I hope you enjoyed or learned something new. And if you have any other questions, you can see me at that table over there. Thank you so much. Aum.
Thank you so much to Roberto Mugaro Barrero and to you for joining us today. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and our We Are the Seeds YouTube channel. From Here with a View, a We Are the Seeds Philadelphia podcast is produced by Michelle St. John, with music by Zachariah Julian and original logo art by Jason Misaw. This podcast is funded in part by Independence Public Media Foundation. For more information, please visit wearetheseeds.org.